Johnny Mac with your daily comedy news. You probably saw all the bad news for Facebook. Seth Meyers said a group of U.S. news organizations began publishing a series of stories based on internal Facebook documents showing the social media platform spreads misinformation, incites violence, and facilitates human trafficking. Even worse, it gives people from high school a way to get in touch with you. Colbert, a bad day for Facebook, the world-stop social media network, and Uncle Radicalizer. Colbert, thanks to hundreds of leaked internal documents, 17 news organizations are publishing a series of stories about all the damage Facebook does. For example, how coordinated groups on Facebook sow discord and violence, including on January 6th. That's in addition to the discord your cousin sows on Facebook by announcing she's named her twins Dash and Otter. Corden, the documents, which are being called the Facebook Papers, reveal frustration among Facebook staff about the company's direction. Yeah, not so great to have all your personal information stolen, is it, Facebook? Kimmel, I don't know. Are we really surprised by this, finding out what did Facebook know? Let me clear it up for you. What Facebook knows. They know everything. They know your social security number. They know where you live, what you're having for lunch. They know the winners of the next five Super Bowls. They're basically Spectre, but we can't stop them because we have to monitor the weight of our former love interests. And Stephen Colbert, unsurprisingly, a lot of misinformation has to do with Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg. Last year, he testified before Congress that Facebook removes 94% of hate speech, but the company's own researchers estimated that it was removing less than 5%. That's a hell of a spread. Mom, I know I said I got 94% on the math test, but it was actually 5%. I didn't lie. I just really suck at math. Rain Wilson tagged in on Twitter saying, so everybody knows Facebook is evil, everybody's outraged, and yet no one stops using it, just like drugs. From the AV Club, Trevor Noah did a segment about police pulling you over for speeding tickets and stuff. In the segment, Trevor talked about the number of traffic and parking citations handed out in your town often has less or nothing to do with public safety and way more to do with raising municipal cash. The whole idea that cops are writing you that citation because of a top-down mandate of lucrative daily traffic stops has long been a cliche. Oh, I know one dad that has warned his son over and over about driving fast late in the month on nice weather days. Oh, look out for it now that I've pointed it out to you, and I come from a family of police officers, but I digress. Trevor Noah also noted that making jokes about such a practice while getting a citation is one sure way to incur some extrajudicial wrath and or violence from the ticket-writing officer, should you be the wrong skin tone. According to one Trevor Noah skit, the response, because your town is broke as F, might be an accurate answer to a cop asking, do you know why I pulled you over? But it's probably not a good idea. As Trevor puts it, nobody likes it, and cops can't even protest this because every time they try, they just beat themselves up out of habit. That's great. The Hollywood Reporter did a long interview with Garrett Morris, Garrett, one of the original Saturday Night Livers, and they asked if Lorne Michaels is a genius, and Garrett was like, yeah, here's why. The show itself, that was a very radical idea in 75. Let's face it, with racism as it was at the time, you wouldn't have thought a show like that would do what it did. Not just racism, but the kind of right-left politics that were going on. He came out stinging everybody, you know? The president, everybody. It was a show in which everybody was made to understand that anybody can be the butt of the joke, even him. Talking about stuff like that, did you see Dave Chappelle's latest show? Hollywood Reporter person said, yes, I did. Garrett, that was brilliant. You thought so? Oh, you didn't think so? Hollywood Reporter, I appreciate him, I respect him, but in the end it upset me. Garrett asked why. Hollywood Reporter, because I felt he was really going after trans people in a way that... Garrett cut that off and said they were going after him. That was a response to something. Hollywood Reporter, well, yeah, I guess I don't see what people say to him. I've only seen what was in these specials. Garrett Morris here. I got that. Relax, everybody. This is comedy. Everybody can be the butt of the joke, and why should it be that if we joke about you, it's sacrilege? You sit in the audience and laugh about jokes about everybody else. If we make a joke about trans or gays, suddenly it's sacrilege? And that's what I got from that. I don't see what's wrong with that, with all due respect. I see it as nothing but a man saying publicly, this is what I do, and if you can't understand that this is comedy coming at you, then don't live in a society that's multicultural. I like to think that he didn't hold back, that he talked the way he felt, and basically he was saying that everybody should be what they are, you know? Look, I was raised partly by a gay uncle, okay? I was raised by a Baptist minister, so by the time I was 12, 13, I knew there was a difference between what was called the ministers of music and other people. Live and let's just live, that's it. I mean, you might have never heard the part where he talked about where the trans person who he had in his lead-in committed suicide. And that's why I think he was angry about what happened to her from her own community. They're talking about how you can't be whatever. To me, that makes no sense. I think Dave is a genius, to be honest. He's a comic genius. I put him on the same level as I put Richard Pryor, but Richard, the last were different. He had the ability to make you laugh at something and later on realize he was making a political point. Dave doesn't do that. Dave has substance going on as he makes you laugh. You're hearing what he's talking about right in your face. Maybe a bad choice, but that's a level up anyway. And for me, Richard Pryor's the greatest monologist I've ever heard in my life, period. They changed topics a little bit. The Hollywood Reporter asked Garrett Morris, where did your news for the hard of hearing bit come from? That's Chevy Chase. Did he ever get a hard time from deaf people about that? Garrett said, matter of fact, no, I didn't. If you're a certain kind of deaf person, you'll be offended, but another kind might see it as effing hilarious. Hollywood Reporter, I remember Fred Armisen used to do the blind governor of New York, David Paterson, on Weekend Update, and he got a lot of heat for that. Garrett said, sure did. But was there a blind governor of New York? Yeah, there was. So shouldn't he play the governor blind then? Hollywood Reporter said, but now everybody gets offended about everything just the way we are. Garrett said, I think we're in a time where that's overboard. Speaking of OG Saturday Night Livers, Bill Murray, who I think joined in season two, he apparently is in Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. And the AV Club says Bill Murray casually revealed it to a German news outlet with no prompting. I am not fluent in German, so I will butcher this, but the news outlet Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, something like that, was like, you work with a lot of directors multiple times. You prefer that's working with new people? And Bill Murray was like, I did a Marvel movie with the guy who made Bring It On. It's possible the translation was not exact, but the basic idea is that Bill Murray wanted to work with Peyton Reed, even though he's not interested in doing these huge comic book adaptations as an actor or otherwise, but because he thinks Bring It On is a damn good film. Murray said Reed's a good guy, but now they just tried out what it's like to shoot a Marvel movie. He doesn't need that experience a second time. Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, comes out July 2023. A little sooner is the Cleveland Comedy Festival. That's coming to Cleveland, November 10th through the 13th. It is headlined by Cleveland native Nick Nemeth, a.k.a. WWE superstar Dolph Ziggler, who knew, and New York comedian Matteo Lane. Other performers include Mike Polk Jr., Jessica Keenan, Ethan Levine, and Mary Santora. Here's a little different from Joint Base Andrews, Maryland. Comedy acts are headed across the globe to multiple U.S. military bases this fall to bring live, lighthearted entertainment to military personnel serving overseas as part of Armed Forces Entertainment Brings the Laughs campaign. The members of Triple Threat are headed to Alaska to bring their 18-plus comedy content to the troops. Adam Keyes, Johnny Cardinale, and Mark Saratella are headed to places such as Joint Base Elmendorf Richardson and Ilson Air Force Base. I bet if you're at one of those places, you didn't need to get this news from me. Meanwhile, Operation Laughter, a buoyant team of stand-up comedians that includes Kermit Apio, Key Lewis, and Andrew Slater, they're heading to Southwest Asia November 3rd to the 16th, and Tommy Davidson is heading to the Pacific region and then Cuba November 11th to December 2nd. Davidson will finish his tour at Naval Station Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, December 1st and 2nd. Didn't expect that, huh? From Gizmodo, Bruce Campbell fights alien zombies in horror comedy Black Friday. I've mentioned on the podcast before, I have a picture of me and Bruce Campbell. I have to go digging and find it. Bruce Campbell is really, really handsome. Now, I'm not a troll. I'm not Brad Pitt. I'm like a regular 50-something suburban dad kind of guy. This picture will be on Instagram at Daily Comedy News. You can see. But boy, when I stand next to Bruce Campbell, I look like, I don't even want to look at the picture. Bruce Campbell's handsome. The plot on Thanksgiving night, a group of weary toy store employees pulls up to work anticipating an unruly door-busting crowd who'll arrive in the wee hours for a frenzy of Black Friday shopping. What they're not expecting is an alien invasion that turns all those customers into a hungry mob of an entirely different persuasion. I think we mean zombies there. Good thing Bruce Campbell, who knows a thing or two about fighting evil in a retail environment, is the store manager. Black Friday, in theaters November 19th, and on demand starting November 23rd. Today's Daily Comedy News is brought to you by the new podcast, Where the Living Meet the Dead. On that podcast, raconteur Robert Edgley, told you about him yesterday. Southern guy with just the coolest speaking voice. He tells ghost stories in one of our favorite ghoulish cities, Savannah, Georgia. Yeah, you gotta listen to these things. They're just like good, like storytelling, spooky tales. He's curated tales that are a mixture of myths, murders, and suspense that takes your imagination winding down the cobblestone streets of one of the oldest and most curious of cities, Savannah, Georgia, Where the Living Meet the Dead, available now wherever you get your podcasts. Mort Saul, the political satirist and stand-up comedy pioneer, passed away at age 94. NPR wrote, long before Jon Stewart or Bill Maher, there was Mort Saul in the 50s when most comedians were telling jokes about in-laws. Mort Saul was ripping politicians. His stream of consciousness style was influenced by jazz, and his topical humor influenced generations of stand-up comedians. His fans included Lenny Bruce and George Carlin. A 1960 Time magazine cover showed Mort Saul surrounded by balloons, each showing a caricature of a U.S. president. Mort Saul holds a long, sharp pin between two fingers ready to start popping. He said it was his job to burst the public's illusion that presidents are father figures. They salute them for a while, then it begins to bother them, and they have a wish to do them in. That's where I come in. He started doing stand-up in the 50s, when most comedians were men in suits rattling off one-liners. Mort Saul, by contrast, wore a V-neck sweater, tucked a newspaper under his arm, and just talked. His savage humor spared no one. When Saul was 33, Time called him a sort of Will Rogers with fangs. From the BBC, Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney, you know, they own the Wrexham Soccer Club. They went to their first game in person. They watched as 10-man Wrexham lost 3-2 after fighting back from 2-0. The actors were accompanied by a crew filming an Access All Areas documentary called Welcome to Wrexham. In case you're curious, Wrexham was down 2-0 after 22 minutes, and then a player was sent off, but they fought back to 2-2. Then Maidenhead's Josh Kelly scored a goal that ensured there would be no fairy tale ending on this occasion, with the home side Maidenhead winning 3-2. Wrexham fan Andy Gilpin said he was gobsmacked to see the Hollywood owners in the stands, and their appearance had given fans a boost. There's media hype, and then they're showing up at Maidenhead away, which isn't the sort of Hollywood entrance, really. It's a very low-key ground, and to see two Hollywood stars there in the middle of the home stand, we were just gobsmacked, you know? It's a statement to come here to Maidenhead away, and fair play to them for doing that. I like this Andy Gilpin. Sounds like a good fellow. Reynolds and McElhenney have invested £2 million in Wrexham after completing their takeover, with their ambition reflected by a number of notable signings. Ryan Reynolds said the aim is to turn Wrexham into a global force. However, Wrexham is 11th in the National League following the loss to Maidenhead. The next game, Saturday, they face Torquay United. From voiceofoc.org, Afghan-American comedian Nilab Saribi knows firsthand what life is like under Taliban rule. She said, when the Taliban took over Afghanistan for the first time in the 90s, I was a 10-year-old refugee in Pakistan at the time, but we had actually traveled to Afghanistan a few times and I'd seen the atrocities they had committed, and a lot of my own family members were victims. I've grown up with this Taliban. I've seen what they do and how they do it, so this was more like, holy crap, this time around I have to do something. I have to take part in fixing this situation. I want to make fun of the Taliban as much as we can. In some strange way, our power of artists is that we have to make fun of them, mock them. We can't go over there and handle them or punish them. So I feel like the power of art is to help bring some kind of light and some kind of humor to such a horrible and dark situation. Minority Reports presents Comedy Benefit for Afghanistan tonight, 7:30 in Irvine, California. And there's an after party at 9 o'clock. And from the BBC for the second time in this podcast, clearly they are your home for comedy news. Social media users have mocked Ohio after they screwed up the license plate. The new design is to honor the Wright brothers' first flight. The new design shows a banner attached to the plane, boasted Ohio as the birthplace of aviation. But the banner, which should have been trailing behind the plane, was actually attached to the front of the plane. Ohio and North Carolina have long been at odds over which state gets to lay claim on the Wright brothers' achievement. Ohio claims that the pair originally hailed from the state, and the plane they completed their 39-second flight in was built in Dayton. They should get the credit. But the flight itself was in Kitty Hawk in North Carolina, and the North Carolinian newspaper The Charlotte Observer joked, "Let's talk about which state Kitty Hawk is in." Ohio is not the first state to mess up a commemorative plate. In 2016, South Dakota was mocked after it attempted to depict Mount Rushmore on its plate, only for angry citizens to point out the image of George Washington was facing the wrong way. And that's your comedy news for today. Follow this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your shows. See you tomorrow.